Welcome to Atlanta Business Radio. I am Lee Cantor, and I am joined in the studio with Mr. Stone Payton. How you doing, Stone?
Good morning, sir. I am doing well, but I'm worn out, man. Yesterday was a big day.
Yes, yesterday was a short day, but it was a long day. We did a lot of interviews. We were at the TAG Summit. What was it?
TAG Technology Summit. They honored the top 40. They did stuff with the top 10. And our buddies who had been in studio with us, what was it, like earlier in the week?
Right, Podponics, best of show.
Right, they won the whole enchilada, right? Is that what that is?
Yeah, it's a real innovative company. They're doing amazing things with lettuce.
And they can grow like 2.5 acres worth of lettuce
in one shipping container.
And, of course, we pressed them a little bit for other cash crops that could be grown, and they did a great job of ducking those questions.
Right, so they're focusing on lettuce.
Exactly, for now.
Right, and the sky's the limit.
Our producer, Trevor, made off with the Podponics lettuce. We didn't get any of it, did we?
Me and you didn't get any, but our production people scored.
Exactly, but that was a lot of fun. We must have done, 25, 30 interviews.
In what, like 5 hours?
In like 5 hours, and we're talking to people. Everybody there, they're so passionate, they're so smart. And it's just it's so different from what you read and hear and see in the news. The environment there is just, it's incredible.
And we were talking to some of the TAG and chamber people about how important it is to engage younger people in business and entrepreneurship and things like that. And we all decided that it would be good if we can send the kids on field trips to the events like that so they can see, you know, literally dozens of firms that are really innovating and doing things. And it's most of the people there were in their 20s. There were young people there.
Oh, I know it. No, it was fantastic. But nothing to compare to what we've got going on this morning, man.
That's right.
It's going to be a great segment. Who do we have this morning?
We have Mr. Brian Meyer, right? Did I say that right?
You said it right. Brian Meyer with Meeting Expectations. Welcome to the show, man.
Thanks, guys. It's great to be here. My pleasure. I'm excited. I hope we get into lettuce even deeper.
Do you do anything with lettuce at Meeting Expectations?
We make wraps. I put it on my sandwich. My doctor told me to eat more salads. So we're supportive of the lettuce industry at Meeting Expectations, I can tell you that. Great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Well, we are delighted to have you. Give us a little bit of a feel for Meeting Expectations, what you guys are out there doing for folks.
Great, absolutely. Well, Meeting Expectations, as the name sort of implies, we plan a lot of conferences. So plan a lot of conferences and meetings. In another part of our business, we also manage nonprofit associations. So we present ourselves as a full-service meeting management and association management firm. And as the name does imply, again, we got our start in the meeting management business, thus Meeting Expectations, all about exceeding expectations. And also lettuce.
And lettuce.
We can't forget that.
Another revenue stream we're working on.
Yes, it's key.
Now, at Meeting Expectations, how did this company come about?
Well, we're celebrating our 20th year in business, so 20 years of exceeding expectations, and we are founded back in 1992 by a lady by the name of Jaylene Bermudez, who has since retired, but she got her start right out of college as an independent meeting planner. A group of technology guys came to see her. They're called the Oracle Applications Users Group, and they said, you know, we would love to have a conference out in Denver. Can you help us? And she said, well, I have a hospitality degree, and I think I'm up to the challenge, and let me help you guys. And so they started their first event in 91, and we took over their second event in 92, and she did just a fantastic job with that and said, I really think I'm onto something here. I think I'll start a company. And she came up with the name Meeting Expectations, and we were founded officially back in 92. And it's been a great 20-year run with lots of changes and fun stuff happening at the company ever since.
Were you part of the company then?
I was not. I came on board back in 1997. We had about 5 or 6 employees, and I was hired on as the staff accountant. I had recently finished grad school down in Orlando,
you
Florida.
You don't have that accountant vibe, I got to say, Brian.
Really?
Oh, test me on some numbers. You know, how much is a head of lettuce these days? $1.19 over at Kroger's. Believe me, I know. I spent my first 5 years at Meeting Expectations as their head accountant, financial manager, and as we grew from 97 to about 2001 or 2, had a lot of employees. I got promoted over the years to the VP Finance and CFO, and she retired back in the summer of 2002, and I was promoted to president back then. So it's been a great 10 years ever since, and we've been growing and doing all kinds of fun stuff ever since.
So you started out with one meeting. How many meetings a year do you do now?
We actually do now about 250 meetings a year, and they can range from a super mega trade show with thousands of attendees and hundreds of exhibit booths on through a basic luncheon or a board meeting right here in Atlanta.
365 days a year, and he does 200 and some odd. That's I would have thought with all the technology platforms available now that the meeting industry would really be suffering. I don't get that sense from you at all.
Well, the meeting industry, it's evolving, and virtual meetings are a really big deal right now. It's a trend that's coming on, but the value of face-to-face meetings has never been more important. And the economic downturn actually taught us all a really valuable lesson in that respect, because if you go back to 2009, obviously it was tough times for the meetings industry and tough times for business in general. And one thing that a lot of corporations and associations learned during that time is that outright canceling their meetings actually had a very detrimental effect on their business. They lost a lot of business by losing that face-to-face interaction. So despite what may be obvious on the outside, if you look at the inner workings of most companies, a lot of business is made having their trade shows and meetings and educational conferences and stuff like that. And that's not to say the virtual meetings and WebExes and things of that nature aren't coming on strong, but the face-to-face meetings are still a big component of every business's business.
Right. Your deals don't get made on a tweet. Right.
That's correct.
In 140
Twitter's...
characters, you can't do a deal in 140 characters.
Test me. Well, Twitter's a big deal in our business, too. Twitter feeds and live Twitter walls at the conferences and promoting
the
conferences.
So all this stuff can play together, right?
It all, you're exactly right. It all links together in a really fascinating and evolving
But it helps
way.
When you look somebody in the eye, shake their hand, kind of get a feel for them personally, because people do business with people.
Yeah, that's absolutely right, and we found out that very valuable lesson in 2009 and 2010. And so the structure of the meetings has changed. I think people are a lot more focused on the cost of the meeting and the value of the meeting and the ROI. That's the big buzzword. That's, you know, what's my return here on this investment? But nevertheless, that value is there and it is growing. And so, as an industry, there's other factors. The cost of airline tickets is going up. Fuel costs are going up. So there's always these new challenges and barriers to overcome. But the value of face-to-face meetings is stronger than ever. But, you know, we took a hit in 2009 and 2010.
Sure.
Just like everybody did, that's for sure. But we stuck to our guns and stuck to our plans and evolved and grew. And we're stronger than ever now in 2012.
Now, do you think that in the meeting, like maybe 5-10 years ago, it used to be that they would bring everybody and it was kind of a vacation / trade show / meeting. And now it's you're getting more of the higher level people in there because of all those ancillary costs. And they're just sending really more key people to these kind of events?
That would be very accurate. There's a more intense focus than ever on the business value of the meeting right now. Absolutely. Nevertheless, incentive-type programs where you're rewarding your top salespeople, for example, those still go on. Those are still really important. That's part of the compensation package. That's part of the motivation for the sales team. So that's still an important part. But nevertheless, the business value and the ROI of the meeting is paramount at the moment.
So I want to get a little bit of free consulting like I always do on these shows. So in the meetings that you coordinate that have a lot of companies there, like an association meeting where it's not just ABC company, what advice, if any, do you have to offer someone on how to work the meeting as far as walking the carpet or in strategizing how to work the meeting from the standpoint of you've got a booth and you're trying to get the best return on investment you can for the 2 or 3 days that you're there?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, it's critically important. If you're an organization, you're going to get a trade show booth. You're going to spend, you know, $3,000 to $5,000 maybe on a great location for your booth. You're going to invest in the booth, the people to go there. So you're looking at a significant investment to get down there. And so the number one piece of advice I can give anybody is do not sit in your booth and look at your iPhone or your BlackBerry the whole time. You need to be out in the hall, in the hallways, meeting people, greeting people, be open, be welcome. Create a really inviting space that people want to stop by and visit, create a compelling booth that people want to stop by and see. Secondly to that, and that's kind of obvious, if you guys have been to a trade show, you see the guy who's sitting there reading his own materials and his iPhone, he's not getting a lot of traffic.
Or either that or you'll see 3 or 4 of them and you know they're in the same company. They're all wearing the same shirt and they're all laughing and joking and talking to each other.
They're very closed off.
People are walking right by them.
Sure. Yeah, that's not inviting. The second thing, let's stick to the basics. Secondly, we mentioned Twitter. Get out in advance of the show. So make your plan 6 months in advance. Learn who the audience is, who's going to be there, and figure out a way to connect with them. So by the time they even get to the show, they know all about XYZ Company. They can't wait to see you. We're giving away an Xbox. We have a putting green. We're going to talk a lot how our products can help your organization save money. So before you even get there, you've won the battle. And that's the biggest thing. So prepare, get the word out. meet the trade show organizers. The organizers, they're the ones that know everybody. They know the attendee base. They can learn about your products. They can help you connect way in advance.
They want to help you.
Absolutely.
It's their best interest
help you.
To help you.
Right,
they want you to come back next year.
Right. That's it. They want you back next year, and that booth fee might be going up 5%, and they have to justify that the following year. And the only way to do that is by helping you get great traffic. And then the third thing, it's the post-show follow-up. There are so many tools that you can utilize on-site as an exhibitor to collect leads very, very quickly, to sort them, to organize them, and then to follow up very quickly after the show why that's still a hot lead. So qualify them right there in the booth, get as much information as you can in a really simple way, and follow up really, really quickly before they forget all about you. And you will win in that case, and you'll be right back at that show the following year.
Do you see that follow-up is kind of where it breaks down? Do you see some people who have booths just not following up?
Follow-up is critical, and it's the maker or the break on that situation. We call it trailing revenues.
Uh-huh.
So you need to have a way to log your trailing revenues, and whether it's the quantity of leads, the deals closed, which is obviously very, very critical, the following path after that, absolutely. So put those tools in place and train your team. Spend some money to get those guys ready to go. When that the door opens, make sure they're ready to roll.
Right. Now, when you're running an event, do you do much coaching on teaching the people who have booths how to optimize their experience? Is that part of what you bring to the table when you're
organizing? We do. If you hire us to run your trade show, exhibitor training is an important part of that. So we put out newsletters, tips and tricks. We'll start what we call an exhibitor council.
Mm-hmm.
So if you care to join that 60 to 90 days out, we'll go through a lot of different tips and tricks on the show and the show hours. Actually, one of the neatest things about the exhibitor councils we form is it allows you to provide input to the show organizers or the association on what you want to see at the show to help you, because that part of the show really is all about the sponsors and the exhibitors that are participating, and they're paying a significant amount of money to be there, and we want to make sure it works well for them. So it's a two-way street. We're there to help.
Now, many of these shows are on behalf of associations, but you're also in the association management business. Yes? Can you speak to that a little bit?
Sure, absolutely. That's actually half our business is the association management business. And it's a difficult concept to grasp sometimes if you haven't heard of it, but a lot of mid-size associations, you guys are probably part of a couple of different associations, broadcasters associations and things like that. They're governed generally by a volunteer board, and then they have to hire staff to go out and do all the stuff, to be the executive director and to market and to do membership recruitment and membership acquisition and accounting and finance and run the conference and things like that. Well, we supply all the staffing for all those functions. So as a volunteer board, you can hire meeting expectations, and by hiring meeting expectations, you have access to either a full-time or part-time executive director, marketing folks, technology infrastructure, office space, everything you'd need to run a multi-million-dollar association right through meeting expectations. And our value proposition is that you get exactly the right people you need to run your organization. So in the fall, you need lots of conference support because that's when your conference is. But in the spring, you're really focused on your membership drive and membership renewals and marketing and finance and budgeting. And so then we put the just-in-time accounting and membership folks on there. And also, if you're a smaller association, you probably can't afford a full-time dedicated CFO. That can be a relatively expensive proposition, but nevertheless, you'd like to have a couple days a week of a CFO, and we can supply that for you.
Now, did this evolve from the meetings? Did you find an association that you could help from that? Is that how that bubbled up, or how did this happen? That's
exactly how it happened. Back when I started in 1997, one of our association-based meeting clients, a smaller organization, said, you know, we really could use some help with some administrative support. Our board members are busy as heck, and we're doing our own books, and this board member's flying all over and trying to recruit members, and we just can't do it.
And so they said,
all volunteers.
Right, so wrangling volunteers is an art by itself.
Oh, no kidding.
Yes, herding cats is indeed a full-time job. And, you know, the thing with volunteers is they're very passionate. They are subject matter experts,
right?
But they are full-time engaged on their current jobs,
sure.
And so it's really tough. And so our job is to make their life a lot simpler, and they can focus on strategy and the things they really enjoy about their profession or their cause, and we can take care of all those details. But that's exactly how it evolved. It started back in 97, and they said, you know, we are just so busy, and we want to grow. And we said, you know, we could do this. And
right.
So we hired a general business type person,
right?
And started running their membership for them. And I was back in the day when I was the head accounting guy. I said, you know, I can do their books for them, and that's exactly what I did. And over time, from 97 to 02, I ended up running the books for about five to seven different nonprofit associations in addition to the Meeting Expectations book. And over time, I hired a bunch of other accountants and membership
folks. And you built systems just for associations, so you have all these best practices so that they're not creating the wheel. You guys already have systems that work. So then
that's exactly right. So when you switch from your current volunteer-supported organization
and their box of little scraps of paper,
we have bigger boxes with more scraps of paper. Yes, we're excellent at that. Absolutely.
And so I understand that you won an award in 2011 that suggests it's a pretty cool place to work too.
We did. We have competed in the Atlanta Best Places to Work for the mid-sized company, and we were one of the winners there, and we were very excited about that. And I think what pushed us over the top was the ice cream machine in the kitchen, because for years we've had great benefits and we've had awesome staff trips. But I think an ice cream machine is what really
I imagine
really
next
did
year
it
when that lettuce shows
that's
up.
That's right, with the fresh lettuce. Yeah,
it's the slam
limit now. Dunk, man. No,
oh, they're going to be streaming in. No, in all seriousness, we're very, very proud of that award. And we have a great team, and we're in the people business, let's face it. Whether it's association management services or conference management services, our people are our number one asset, and we invest heavily in our people. We try to find the very best we can in our business, and we do everything that we can to keep them happy and engaged and working hard and taking great care of our customers. And so we're very, very proud of that and very happy to have won that award, and it's all due to a great team.
Now, are there any little tricks or tips you can have to get your people engaged? Like, you're an accountant, right?
So we how'd keep
you pull this
off?
And
how'd
you pull this off?
I'd like to start with FASB 21, right, which is back to the 1997. Well, the first thing we do is we don't talk to them about Sarbanes-Oxley, because
really?
That's a real buzzkill around the office for sure. I do think that in addition to some of the neat things we do at the office, I think we have a great program in place to keep everybody engaged. And it starts with just how we set our goals as an organization and open and transparent communication to and from staff. So we set our goals as a company, and then that cascades down to the goals in the various business units and departments of the company, and then everybody builds their goals around that. So it's very goal-oriented, and if you're on track and our goals are structured, they're really simple. Mm-hmm. Customer satisfaction is numero uno. You take good care of your customers, you make your customers happy, and our whole business model revolves around renewing our customers year over year, and we have a 95% year-over-year client retention rate. So the staff knows where we stand on these things, and if they do a really great job on taking care of their customers are going to come back, and financially that's going to help them attain their personal goals, professional goals, and things like that. So those are the things we do, in addition to just a great benefit structure and trying to do work from home and staying on top of the latest and greatest that we can do for our wonderful team.
Now, how do the meetings people play with the association people? Are they all in the same room? Like, how do you...
We pit them against each other.
It's a survivor-like
races. Yeah, so unfortunately, yesterday I had to walk somebody out because they lost the survivor contest.
Are they separate, or is like association people doing association stuff and meeting people are doing meeting stuff? Or
there's specialists in each area. There are, mm-hmm, absolutely, but you have to put everything together to create a great team. And I'll use a local model, and it's a group that you guys are a little bit familiar with, is SHRM Atlanta.
Right.
Yeah.
And so the SHRM team is comprised of association experts. They have an executive director, and they have a finance person.
Right.
They have a membership manager and a marketing person. But they also have conference and registration expertise. And so we put that all together on an as-needed basis to create a single team, a single unified team to work together to do both a conference and the overall board support and all the association needs and the strategic planning and the tactical implementation and all that kind of stuff.
So the conference person for SHRM might be working on conferences at other times for other meetings that are happening,
yes,
throughout the year.
That could happen. And absolutely. Right. And it's a value proposition for SHRM, and that they only pay for the team they need when they need
them. When they need it, right.
And then that person could very well transfer to a fall program. They just finished their event, their very successful event, I might add, just a few weeks ago. So they may very well help out on another team for an event this fall.
Right.
That was a fantastic event. We had the pleasure of doing remote broadcast,
yes,
from there. That was fabulous. Now, there is a consulting practice in this empire as well. Yes,
Ascend.
Yeah.
We do. Another organization that we started about 3 years ago, Ascend Consulting, ascendci.com. And what we found over the years is some associations, they aren't quite ready to outsource everything. But you mentioned best practices. And if you're a small to mid-sized association, maybe you've had the same team doing the same things for a number of years, and you could use a little bit of outside expertise. Maybe it's some consulting on your technology infrastructure. Maybe you found that your membership numbers are slipping a little bit and you don't quite know why. Maybe your financial model is not quite right. Maybe your board is not as engaged as they should be, or your strategic plan's not quite where it needs to be. So what we'll do is we'll take our cadre of executive directors and we'll put them on your association for 60 to 90 days, and we'll really try to pinpoint for you what's working and what's not working, create a full-blown strategic plan that you could implement in the coming years.
So it's you come in there and you get them jump-started, and then you kind of
I'm going to use that. Do you need a jump start? Call Ascend Consulting.
There you go.
You got to trademark that.
You're welcome.
We can also
consulting here too.
And we can even consult. Maybe your meeting's not quite meeting what it needs to do. And so we can send some of our VP conference planning team out to just look at that event. End event. Is the trade show not where it wants to be? Are your attendee surveys not that strong? So we can even take a look just at your overall event top to bottom as well.
So assessing is an important component of your business, because you're constantly checking to see that everybody's happy along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. That's very true. So, and we actually have monthly at the office, we employ a whole bunch of executive directors at meeting expectations. I'd say we probably have 6 to 8 executive directors on staff that work on various clients, some full-time and some that work on multiple clients. So we have our own internal executive director roundtable, and they just share best practices, what's working, what's not working, what's coming down the pike, who can attend what industry function. So it's really, really beneficial to all of our clients. I think they're all they benefit greatly.
Now, when you're running an association, do you have a tip for association people right now, like on how to kind of, like you mentioned earlier, wrangle these volunteers to do a good job of keeping them motivated?
How long is this show?
Yes.
Well, because I know I've been involved in some nonprofits where that's a big challenge, man. To get the volunteers to engage when you want them to. And like you say, they get distracted by shiny objects like their own career. And you know, the people running the associations want them to focus primarily on the association because that's the most important to the people running it. But the volunteers have other interests.
Yeah, it's the $100,000 question. I think we have a good system in place to help optimize the use of volunteers. And it starts with this basic concept is that they're there for a reason. I mean, they want to be engaged. They're passionate about whether their profession or their cause or what have you. And I think it's our job as a staff to make sure that we lay out for them a really good plan that's focused around what they really enjoy. And once you get past what they're just generally engaged about, that concept, find out deeper what they really like. Do they like membership? Do they like the sponsor community? Do they have a secret internal desire to plan events? So you figure out what really they are interested beyond just the basics, and then you put them on that committee, whether it's the conference committee or the membership committee, or you know, everybody has a secret desire internally to be an accountant.
Right.
Yeah. So you get them right on that finance committee right away. I've always wanted to be an accountant, but I'm just not good with math, that kind of thing. So we'll put them right on the finance committee. So you dig down, you figure out what their passion is. And the other key is just don't overwhelm them and burden them with tons and tons of details. That's what our job is. We want to set it up. We want to make it easy, tee it up, and make it fun.
Cool.
That sounds like great advice.
Yeah, no, that's great. Now, what do you guys got going forward? What's in your future?
Well, 2012 is going to be, I think, our busiest year ever. So we're trying to bring on a few new customers. We just finished a great event for the American Beekeeping Federation, the ABF,
yes.
A really fun and unique client. And we finished a great event for a group called Minecraft. They call their event Minecon out in Vegas. Right around the corner, we'll be out in Vegas again for one of our oldest and longest-standing client, the OEG, the Oracle Applications User Group, out in Vegas. About 6,000 or 7,000 people out at that event, and then we just knock them down. We have the ISBN, the International Salon and Beauty Network, and it just goes
nonstop
from there. Absolutely. So conference, and nationwide and around the world.
So you're always looking for meetings to plan, right? And you're always looking for associations to work with?
Oh, absolutely. And you can check us out at meetingexpectations.com.
All right. Well, this is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. This wraps up another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. Before we go, though, I want to give a quick shout out to our friends at BusinessWise, Deborah Klein. They're the best database of Atlanta business owners that you will find. And I want to give a shout out to her and thank her for all she does to make our lives easier here at Business Radio X. You can go to businesswise.com to learn more. This is Lee Cantor. We will see you all next time.